Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is my pal, Captain Clinton Robinson. Hi, Clinton.
Wow, Captain. I was expecting to come in a corporal at best.
I feel as though anyone that is nice enough to do MASHcast should at least be an officer. I feel like that's the least I can do. And I like the alliteration of Captain Clinton as opposed to Lieutenant Clinton. So Captain Clinton it is.
Well, I mean, Captain works for Steve Rogers. Captain will work for me.
There you go. Perfect. So thank you for doing this. This is your first MASHcast. This is the first time we've recorded together in a very long time. And so this is great. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. So we're here to talk about season 4, episode 11 of Moose and Men. The original air date was November 21st, 1975. But before we get to the show, as I just said, Clinton, this is your first appearance on MASHcast. So I got to ask you, how did you become a fan of the show, of MASH?
Oh, wow. This was kind of a convoluted route. You know, everybody else gets their start when they're a kid. In my childhood, I saw at the video rental store the VHS of MASH the movie, you know, with the oh-so-clever peace symbol with the legs and everything. And for some reason, my mother told me that at 10 years old, I probably wouldn't enjoy it. Go figure. So I really didn't actually watch much MASH until probably my college days, when it was just on about 4 different channels, 10, 12 hours a day.
Right.
So it's like, okay, I'll give this MASH show a shot. And of course, you know, being on various channels, you had about 3 different seasons going at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of hard to put together a real continuity on anything.
Right, right, right.
But it was like, okay, well, you know, I've got this long-running show here. I can kind of pick and choose. It seemed funny enough. Get me entertained.
So your mom made no distinction between the movie and the show? Like, you know, like at what point did you realize, oh, this is a show, not just a movie? Was there some point where you realized that these are kind of two separate things?
As far as, like, being two separate things, like, I just assumed, like, the show was a continuation of the movie.
Right.
I didn't realize, like, it was two totally different continuity things.
Right.
I mean, I knew the show existed. There were commercials for it when I was a teenager and all that. You know, everything was in syndication. But it was just kind of like, oh, yeah. I mean, now granted, like, I watched Tour of Duty when it was on the first run. And, you know, I had seen Stripes. Granted, you know, an edited for television version of Stripes, but
you probably won't like it, Clinton.
Yeah, that was the odd thing. She was just like, "You probably won't like it." It's like,
now, I got to ask you about when your mom said that to you. Was she being genuine, or was she trying to be a good mom and throw you off the trail of something that she didn't want you to see?
I think it was, well, kind of somewhere in the middle. Like,
okay,
you know, my mom really didn't censor a whole lot of things for me. I mean, I was watching Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th movies from the time I was like 7 or 8.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. Mama Robinson was kind of relaxed about that stuff. That's cool. Okay, cool. All right.
Oh yeah. You know, full frontal nudity wasn't a bother.
Wow.
You know, language wasn't a bother. That was the funny thing. It was just kind of like, well, you know, you go to public school.
That's awesome. That's great. It was
just kind of when I was like, no, I don't think you'll like it. It's kind of like, okay.
So she was being genuine. She really thought you wouldn't like a movie about a comedy about the Korean War. It wasn't because she didn't want you to see the nudity and the violence and the language.
Right.
Oh, that's really, that's great. That's very unusual. I didn't grow up like that necessarily. So, That's really interesting. Okay, so you eventually started watching the show, and you were watching it in reruns at that point.
Oh yeah, very much so, because this was, you know, late 90s when I was really actually starting to watch it. So, you know, it had only been off the air for like 15 years.
Right. Something like that. Okay. Now,
but it was new to me.
Right. Now, I know that you still are catching it in some form, because I know that, like, you'll text me in the middle of the night sometimes with a line from an episode. So where is it airing where you are in the middle of the night? Like, what's the context for where it's still airing?
No, I tend to like watching it, late afternoon, early evening on MeTV.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. And then you're texting me later on after you've seen it?
Yeah, but gotcha. Sometimes, okay. If I'm at work or whatever and they've got the TV on in the lobby, I'll catch an episode on AMC or something.
Gotcha. Okay. Very cool. All right. That's excellent. I have to try and get your mom on one of these shows because that's really interesting. So, okay. So, as I said, we're here to talk about season 4, episode 11 of Moose and Men. It originally aired on November 21st. It was written by Jay Fulb and directed by John Erman, two names relatively unfamiliar to MASH listeners. We'll get into their biography shortly. But in the episode, Sergeant Zale gets a disturbing letter from his wife confessing to an affair. In a drunken rage, he punches a metal barrel in the mess tent, breaking his hand. BJ takes him to the hospital, and Zale asks to help him write a letter home since his writing hand is out of commission. Meanwhile, Hawkeye runs afoul of a colonel who he accidentally splashes with mud when his Jeep hits a puddle. The colonel, named Spiker, played by Tim O'Connor, ends up getting wounded and brought to the 477th, but he demands Hawkeye not touch him. But he's so gravely wounded, Hawkeye ends up working on him anyway, and it's only through his superior surgical skill that Spiker pulls through. Later, BJ, having finished Zale's letter, tries to track him down. Radar tells him he's with his moose, a.k.a. a Korean girlfriend. BJ hands Zale the letter, but lets his dismay be known. Zale is mad at his wife for cheating, yet here he is with a woman. BJ talks Zale into forgiving his wife and sending the letter he wrote. Colonel Spiker wakes up in post-op, still enraged at Hawkeye. He finds his clothes, in his lack of shave, his whole demeanor, a disgrace. He fully intends to file a court-martial against Hawkeye. It isn't until Colonel Potter tells Spiker that it was Hawkeye who worked on him, and that Hawkeye, while being an oddball officer, is nevertheless a top-flight surgeon. Suffering saddle soap, you owe your life to that man, Potter offers. Spiker reconsiders and decides to drop the charges, albeit grudgingly. Hawkeye is thankful, but can't help being a little sarcastic too, ordering up, quote, another bottle, here, put it on my tab. Hawkeye and BJ meet up in the swamp that night for drinks, relating to each other the events of the day. They also pop inflated rubber gloves on the count of three, causing the always paranoid Frank to jump right out of his bed, pulling the trigger on his gun, which is actually just a harmless lighter. So, okay, Clinton, of Moose and Men, overall, what are your thoughts on this era of MASH? Let's start there. What do you think about this, the BJ Potter-Frank combination of seasons 4 and 5?
Okay, so like I said, I was watching it, you know, very piecemeal throughout different seasons. And I quickly came to realize that, you know, I much preferred BJ over Trapper.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, at the time, I really liked Winchester more.
Okay.
But upon, like, going back and rewatching, especially, you know, being able to watch it in order, thank you, Hulu, I really liked, you know, Hawkeye and BJ and Frank altogether. And of course, you know, Potter over, I mean, no offense to Henry.
Right, sure.
But Potter just plays off of everybody a whole lot better, in my opinion.
Okay, all right. This episode, I mean, this is an interesting format. This is the A-B plot, which is something that MASH would lean on very heavily in later seasons. This is kind of one of the early versions of that, where you have two very distinct storylines going on, where some of the characters are involved in the A story, and then the other characters involved in the B story, and really never the twain shall meet. Now, we'll get into it at the end. Hawkeye and BJ sort of relate to each other what went on at the end, but this is a very, very, two very distinct stories. And by the way, there's even kind of a third story that I sort of left out of this summation, which is Frank's paranoia about that there's basically terrorist infiltration in the camp, which is the whole thing with the lighter. And there's a scene where he accosts some Korean locals and stuff. And so it's all that, you know, he's paranoid about the whole thing. And that's kind of like it's not a C plot, but it's like it's like a .5 plot. It's just like a little thing that they're weaving in. This is a format that MASH would end up using a lot. And I'm not a huge fan of it. It just feels a little, I don't know, I don't want to say lazy, but it just feels disjointed that you've got two so distinct plots going on. But I like it here in that, of course, we're trying to get to know BJ as a separate character. So it makes sense to give him kind of his own storyline separate from Hawkeye.
Right. Yeah, this is definitely like a co-star, equal billing between BJ and Hawkeye in this one. Frank, like you said, he's threaded in. He really kind of like intersects in both their stories, but he's not really a part of either one.
Right. This is, of course, Sergeant Zale's first appearance in season four. We saw him all throughout the first seasons two and three of MASH, but here he's making his debut with the newer characters. And I'm guessing that if they wanted to write this plot, the idea that that BJ is going to help a someone write a letter home, it's got to be a married character. And Radar's not married. Klinger's not married. Certainly Father Mulcahy's not married. And it's not going to be Potter. So we have to come up with some character who we can, you know, thread in this idea that he's getting a Dear John letter. So it's like, it might as well be Zale. I guess it could have been maybe Igor or something. But Johnny Hamer as Sergeant Zale was sort of like the almost a regular kind of thing. So I guess it makes sense to give him a plot. This is probably the biggest storyline he gets in all of MASH. I mean, he gets like a whole thing to himself. I mean, he gets an extensive scene with his moose, and we'll talk about all that. And we find out his backstory with his wife Zelda and stuff like that. So this is Johnny Hamer must have enjoyed having this much to do this week on MASH.
Wait, what did you say his wife's name was?
I think, isn't her name Zelda?
Hilda.
Hilda.
With two L's.
That's right, Hilda. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was thinking Zelda Zale. That's Johnny Hamer. We went into his career early on when he made the first appearance. He had a lot of great credits. He was in, he did a lot of voiceover work. He did a lot of Transformers, strangely enough. you know, my favorite. He's in Annie Hall. He's in Real Life by Albert Brooks, one of my favorite movies. So he's had quite a wonderful career. Before we even get to all that, though, I got to talk about really kind of the opening scene with Tim O'Connor as Colonel Stryker. And I don't know about you, Clinton, but when you were watching this episode, the whole gist of it is that Colonel Stryker and his men are running like a security checkpoint of some Korean locals. And Hawkeye and Frank are in the Jeep and they can't get by. Their road is blocked. And so Hawkeye starts to honk his horn to kind of like be able to go around. And he's kind of obnoxious about it. Like he honks his horn like 10 times. And you can see Colonel Stryker kind of like wave his arm like, all right, come over here. And I was like, I'm a little like, I think I'm kind of on Colonel Stryker's side here. It's like, Hawkeye, be patient for a second. Like, just let them do their jobs. I don't know. It felt a little obnoxious.
Yeah, it seems like it would have been something that they would have scripted like Frank to lean over and start honking for him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I could see Burns doing it, but not Hawkeye. And then there's a really pretty good combination stunt. I guess it's sort of a stunt. And then editing where we see there is this pothole in the road and it's filled with muddy water. And we see that Colonel Stryker is standing right by it. And Hawkeye accidentally dunks his tire into it and splashes it up on Stryker's face. And it's a hard cut where we see the Jeep hit the pothole. And then we have another shot of Stryker getting splashed with mud. And obviously it's an effect that they did. They probably had some sort of hose down off camera range and spraying Tim O'Connor with the mud, but it's a really good edit. Like it really looks, it looks real that mm-hmm. when Hawkeye hits the thing, it splashes up and you're like, obviously there would be no way to control that. But it looks really good. And if I was Colonel Stryker, I don't know. I think I'd be pretty mad at Hawkeye too, because it's like Hawkeye didn't pay attention enough to avoid the pothole and he gets covered in mud. And there's this big close up of Stryker and he's just caked in mud. I think I'd be pretty pissed off too, knowing that you're in the middle of Korea. You're probably not getting a shower anytime soon.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, Hawkeye does say, you know, he hasn't slept in like 2 days.
That's true. That
he's
is true.
Just, you know, he and Frank have been doing surgery nonstop.
That is true. Stryker does say when Hawkeye says, I said, I was sorry. Stryker says, sorry, don't feed the bulldog. And in the previous episode, we have Potter saying, kindness don't feed the bulldog. These were written by two separate writers, but I love that phrase is obviously something, it was more like a 40s and 50s phrase. So it was something that, the writers felt like it was appropriate to put in MASH, but I love that it's in two consecutive episodes, in two different forms, kindness or sorry, don't feed the bulldog.
Well, now I'm just curious, what does feed the bulldog?
What does feed the bulldog? I don't know. What would be appropriate to feed the bulldog? Actor Tim O'Connor, we got to talk about him. He plays Colonel Spiker. He died in 2018. He was on this, and he did another episode of MASH. He did the season 8, I think, no, season 9 show, Operation Friendship, playing a different character, another one who has a big issue with Hawkeye. He's always playing people that are pitted against Hawkeye in one way or the other. He's probably most famous as Dr. Hewer in Buck Rogers in the 25th century. He had appearances in shows like Cannon, Streets of San Francisco, Wonder Woman, Dynasty. Did you ever watch Buck Rogers, Clinton? Are you a fan of that show?
Again, I came to Buck Rogers pretty late, but yes.
I watched that show, and I found a fun credit in his IMDb page. He played Dr. Hewer on an episode of 321 Contact, the kids show.
I saw that.
I don't know. I watched that show. Now, I don't remember that, but I mean, did they do like a Buck Rogers episode or something? I just love the idea that he played the character in another show somewhere. That's really great.
I mean, the only thing I can think is it was probably like an episode about how TV shows are made or something.
Maybe. Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. Maybe that, you know, it was like shots of him actually being Dr. Hewer or something.
There's an episode of Reading Rainbow where LeVar Burton shows everybody the stage where they film Star Trek The Next Generation.
So. Oh, that's cool. All right. That's cool. Yeah. I like that a lot. I think that's that's fun. So after the initial scene with Stryker, and then so we get the scene in the mess tent with BJ and Zale. There's a great line where he punches the, you know, BJ says, whatever you do, Zale, you know, yell, cry, yodel, don't hit. And he punches the stove and he says, yeah. And he says, you know, good work, Zale. You turned your hand into a maraca. And then as he takes him off to the hospital, I love that Zale goes, how come I don't feel no pain? And BJ says, it's swimming upstream against the bourbon, which is, that's a great line. I love that. We cut back to the sort of the A plot of Stryker has come in and he's wounded. Now that's a whole sequence that they chose to leave out. We don't see Stryker get wounded. We just have to like, okay, this happened. And Potter's coming out of the shower. I love that Potter's in his robe with his toothbrush, carrying his toothbrush. And Stryker immediately says he doesn't want Hawkeye to work on him, or he doesn't want to be worked on at the 477th. And of course, Colonel Potter is having none of it. He's like, you know, if you're wounded, this is where you want to be cared for here. And Stryker is not hearing any of it. He doesn't want to be wounded. He doesn't want to be worked on by Hawkeye, which is, again, you got to admit that's some real hatred, that you would risk your life just because you don't like the guy who might operate on you.
I mean, what does he say? He wants taken to the 121st evac or something?
Yeah.
It's like he's willing to wait several miles worth of travel just to go and get put on a helicopter to go to another hospital.
Yeah, and he's obviously very wounded because we get to the scene in OR and, you know, we see Hawkeye really breaking a sweat here. I mean, he's talking about, he's asking Mark of all these different issues. He's clearly struggling. So Stryker is obviously very wounded, like nearly mortally wounded. And so, yeah, he would be willing to take his life in his hands just to not have Hawkeye work on him. And it's a pretty straightforward scene with Hawkeye where he's talking about what he's got to do. He's talking about like retracting the lung and stuff. And then, of course, Burns, we've got Burns operating on someone else. And it's Burns, I keep saying this virtually every week, but Burns at his worst. But this is really pretty bad here where he talks about he's working on a Korean, and he talks about how they're treacherous. And then he says, and clever boy, they don't all look alike by accident. And then, of course, we have a reverse shot of his nurse, which is Nurse Kelly. And she just gives him this look of like, uh-huh. And then Burns just kind of shuts up and moves on. And it's just like, oh, man, he's such a jackass. He's just such a jackass.
You kind of get the feeling like nobody poisoned his coffee just because they needed one more surgeon.
Seriously. But considering all the shenanigans that went on in the first couple seasons of the show, you really do wonder why they didn't do that and then just get another surgeon sent in. He's got to be no better than Burns, right? He's got to be, you know, he can't possibly be worse. So after that scene, we're back in the swamp, and BJ is writing Zale's letter for him, and he's talking about that he's, you know, and it's sort of funny that the letter that BJ is writing is obviously much more erudite than anything Zale could pull off. And you got to wonder, it's like, what does he think Hilda is going to think when she reads this? Because it does not read like Zale at all. I mean, it's kind of poetic.
Yeah, he very much, you know, states in the opening line that BJ's writing it for him.
Yeah. and I love that he's even kind of like making the argument. He's arguing against his wife to BJ, and BJ is the one who's trying to, you know, sort of feel better, you know, make him feel better about what she's done, which is an interesting idea. I mean, he's sort of siding, knowing what we'll know about BJ in the later season, he's sort of siding with Hilda here. You got to wonder, not to be grim, but, you know, if Peg Honeycutt had done this, would he be that forgiving? I don't know. Yeah. It's probably easier to be forgiving on someone else's behalf than on your own.
Well, I mean, this shows that BJ still new to the whole being shipped out over to Korea. He's still got a glimmer of hope. He's looking on the bright side of everything as much as possible.
Right. You know, yes. Yeah.
You know, he's the one that's probably sitting in the swamp telling Hawkeye, hey, you know, what are we over here? Another 6 months tops.
Yeah.
You know, they'll have peace talks. We'll be out of here. No problem.
Yeah, that's true.
Not another, like, you know, six seasons.
Yeah, there won't be another. Yeah, we won't be here until 1983. It'll be fine. So then we have kind of, as I mentioned, the sort of the 0.5 plot where Frank is dressing down some of the locals, some of the people who obviously are sort of the service industry of the 477th. And
this scene is so hilarious.
He's so awful. He's just so awful. Because first of all, you get the sense none of these people understand English. And he's insulting them to their faces. And he's suspicious of all of them. He's talking about how, you know, you can turn a bar of soap into an explosive. And he's trying to convince Radar, of course, is trying to soften Frank. And then they get to the last one, who's this little kid. And, you know, he's the little boy, and the kid's adorable. He's got he looks like something out of Oliver, because he's got like a suit jacket and a little hat. And Frank is like, oh, yeah, he's the perfect size, the perfect cover for who knows what. And then he reaches into the kid's jacket and like kind of roughs the kid up. And I like this moment because you see when Burns is doing that, Radar kind of forgets himself and he kind of yells at Burns. He goes, Major! Like, he yells at him as much as he could probably get away with, much more so than Radar would ever be comfortable yelling at an officer. But I like in this moment that Radar is genuinely offended because Burns is, again, being such a dick.
And, I mean, you know, Radar's been mocking him the entire time, dancing behind his back, making that little bird almost, like, peck Frank's ear.
Yep.
But then when Frank, you know, pulls out what he thinks is, you know, some sort of explosives, it's a sandwich. You open it up and you see what's inside. Ham.
Yeah. I love the way Berghoff says that too. He just goes, ham. Like, he's just like restating to Burns, like, you idiot.
Yeah.
So then,
how much stupider can you get, Frank?
Yeah. So then Burns, well, don't ever test Frank on that.
Yeah. Episode's not over yet.
Yeah, episode's not over yet. So then he goes back down the line and he starts going on and on about the new rules that are going to be in place. And I love that, of course, behind him, Radar is undoing all that. He's like, you must come to see me to get a pass. And you see Radar point to himself like, no, come to me. And then he says, you'll keep your soap visible in bar form, exit the area no later than 1 p.m. And I love you see Radar go, Five. He puts his hand up. He's five. And then that's when he does a little bird. He's got like a fake little bird on his hand, and he does a little salute to hide behind, you know, when Burns turns around. And then there is what Burns thinks is an explosion. And he said, hit the deck, and it's just a baseball, and it hit a barrel. And then we see it was thrown by a nurse. And by the way, that nurse is played by an actor named Lois Foraker. She plays Nurse Abel, one of the 97 actresses to play Nurse Abel over the course of MASH. She had roles in movies like Gremlins, Exorcist 3. She was on some TV shows, X-Files, Days of Our Lives, and played Nurse Coleman on After MASH. Huh. So she got to go on to After MASH, which is, you know, good for her. And she wanders off the frame. We'll see her again later on. And then there's the button on the scene where Burns wants to buy this lighter, which is in the shape of a gun. By the way, wouldn't having anything that looks like a real gun that was not a gun be a horribly dangerous idea?
Yeah, I mean, it really seems to be. But, I mean, this is also, I mean, just them trying to make money any way they can. You know, the peddler guy's got pots and pans and everything else in his coat.
I get, but so is it in your in your estimation? Is this a gun that's been repurposed into a lighter? Is that how it works?
No, I mean, I think it looks like it's pretty small to actually be considered.
It's a tiny gun, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, when you see it later in the episode, you know, Frank pulling it out to try and shoot at the stuff in the swamp. I mean, it's pretty small in Frank's hands. And Frank's not exactly, like, a huge guy.
No, no. I would never, I'm not a gun guy, but I would never want to own an object that looked like a gun that wasn't a gun, because people then would mistake it for a gun.
Yeah.
And that might be a bit of a problem. If you don't want someone thinking you've got a gun when you don't have one.
This is also 1950s style mentality.
That is true.
Granted, you know, they're in a literal war zone.
Right.
But
right. The standards are different, obviously.
Yeah.
So that's the end of Act One. We come back to Act Two. We're in post-op, and we see that Hawkeye has pretty much slept all night in the bed next to Stryker. There's a weird scene where it's not weird, but Margaret comes in and she says, slightly admonishes Hawkeye for being there all night. Seems like unnecessary. And she says, you know, a nurse was here. She's not here to paint her nails. And he says, no offense, but he needed a doctor, not a nurse. And he mentioned something about these drains needed to be emptied. And I'm like, well, nurses can handle that. That seems a little insulting. The nurse knows how to do that, Hawkeye. You don't have to. They've already established the nurses at the 477th are top flight. So that seems slightly arrogant of Hawkeye, although he has been known to say things like that.
Yeah. I mean, I know the scene's there to try and, like, point out that Hawkeye is genuinely concerned about this colonel and everything. Did Margaret's lines feel a little off for her to you, or is it just me?
In what way?
I know we haven't quite gotten to the reworking of Major Houlihan into Margaret, and you know, we're still kind of in a Hot Lips era, but I don't know, it just, she feels a little too motherly.
Hmm.
Kind of to me.
To Hawkeye, you mean?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. She's very kind to him. This is one of the nicest, it says, there's only one reason this man didn't die. And she says, you know, basically it's because of him. And Hawkeye says, somebody ought to tell him. And she says, somebody will, I'm sure. So yeah, she is. In the meantime, I'd like to congratulate you myself, Doc. She's being very nice to him. Maybe because she was assisting and saw how hard he worked on this guy. But okay. Yeah, this is probably the nicest Margaret's been in a while.
Yeah, I think that's just kind of it. She's not, you know, this isn't the post-Donald Penobscot, you know, I'm going to actually look at life in a different way, Margaret.
Right,
so,
right, yeah.
You know, this is still, well, you know, I'm with Frank until a better thing comes along. I don't, it just feels different compared to some of the other stuff. But then again, you know, she really hasn't gotten a lot of play this season.
No, right. I mean, part of it was Loretta Swit was off doing a movie and a play during season four. So she's literally not in the show all that much this season. She'll have a lot of great moments in season five, but here she's not in it a whole lot. And I always wondered whether the writers, Margaret gets engaged in episode two of season five, right off the bat, basically. And I wondered if at this point the writers, Larry Linville, I think, had already talked about that he was unhappy and wanted to leave the show, was expressing his displeasure at sort of being asked to do the same thing over and over again. I wondered if at this point they knew to start seeding that, just to start slowly putting them. They stopped putting Margaret and Frank together as co-conspirators. Mm-hmm. They would basically only do it once or twice more until Frank leaves the show. But here they are virtually separate. I mean, this whole plot line with Burns, where he's worried about that there's terror, you know, people planting bombs outside the camp. It's completely him. Margaret's not involved in it at all. So I wonder if the writers were starting to say, well, let's separate them a little more. And then it'll be easier to deal with when we get Margaret to get Margaret engaged in season five. Or that was an invention over the course of the summer break between seasons four and five. But yeah, it does feel like that they are slowly getting there here, because she is so separate from Burns through a good chunk of this season. So after there's a scene with Burns where he thinks he sees some people digging a hole outside the camp, and he thinks they're burying a bomb. We have, we're back in post-op, and there's a great scene with Harry Morgan and Tim O'Connor here, where Stryker thinks that well, first of all, he goes off on about Pierce, and he calls him an oddball, and he says he calls him a goof off, and then it's Potter's job to explain to him that Hawkeye was the one that worked on it. And you see Stryker get offended, and he says it was him, not you. And he says, lucky for you, yes. Which I like that. I like that Potter is like, well, you know, of course I'm a good doctor, but Hawkeye's sort of next level good doctor. And it's a really, this is not the kind of story you could have done. And I love Henry Blake, but this is not the kind of story that you could have done with Henry Blake, which again, I think is great because it helps expand the show, is that this guy, the only reason Stryker is not putting Hawkeye up on charges is because he respects Colonel Potter to this level. And Potter is able to talk to him in a way that no one else would be able to get. I mean, he's straight up yelling at this guy. And in fact, he comes within moments of calling him a horse's ass. He doesn't say that. He says, I learned to look at life from the top of a horse. Sometimes I feel like I'm still on a horse, only this time I'm looking down at a horse's dot, dot, dot. And I like that. I like that Potter is able to kind of pull those strings with a guy like Stryker, who is a complete hard ass, and Potter is able to display that kind of authority. And I love him. He says, you're alive and kicking like an army mule. And the only reason you're still around is because of that man's skill and dedication as a surgeon. Suffering sad off hope, you owe your life to that man. Again, it's great performance by Harry Morgan. And I get, it's something we never really got to see on MASH until Colonel Potter came around.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a guy that, you know, like Potter says, you know, they're both straight army, you know, regular army. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a guy that respects rank way more than the person.
Yep. Yes.
So, you know, like it, you know, if Potter says it, then he's going to listen. If anybody else at the 4077 says it, he's just going to ignore him because, you know, he's the colonel. Everybody else is below him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but even then, though, like his pride won't let him actually really apologize to Hawkeye. You know, he just, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm going to not, you know, bring you up on charges. The closest he says, you know, to anything is like, you know, when Hawkeye's like, how do I repay you? Forget it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, maybe we were both better off forgetting this ever happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God. I love that. We'll get to that in a second. I love Hawkeye's response to that. So after that scene, we are in Radar's office where BJ's coming looking for Zale. Radar has to tell him that he's with his moose. And of course, BJ, not having seen season one of MASH, is unfamiliar with what a moose is. Mm-hmm. And he has to ask what it is. There's a great moment where Radar is talking about eating his ice cream.
And
he says, you know, you enjoy walking in the rain. And, you know, Radar's like, yes, sir. He's like, you could be my wife. And BJ's just having a little bit of fun, slightly at Radar's expense, because he knows it's going to make Radar a little uncomfortable. But it's a sweet scene that he's just being kind of, he's just kind of being warm to Radar about, you know, you like ice cream, you like to walk in the rain. It's almost like he's going to break into the Pina Colada song.
Yeah, but at the same time, Mike Farrell has this look on his face that you can tell, like, he's, you know, half lost in thought about Peg at that moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, and poor Radar is just like, I'm not that kind of guy.
He's not fully understanding what the joke that BJ is kind of doing. He just is sort of confused by it. But it's a very sweet interaction. And again, we're getting a chance to see Mike Farrell with all these characters by himself outside of the purview of Hawkeye, which I think is great because we're getting a more rounded view of the character of what BJ is like when he's by himself. Of course, the previous episode, Dear Peggy, we got to hear basically inside his head and stuff. But it's a ever-expanding view of this man across season four and beyond. So then – Back in post-op, they don't have a post office at the 4077. Back at post-op, we have the interaction again with Stryker and Hawkeye. And as you talked about, Stryker makes it very clear to Hawkeye that the only reason he's not pressing charges is because Colonel Potter vouched for him, which is, again, a really kind of dickish way of saying it, saying I'm letting you off the hook, but only because Colonel Potter speaks to you, not because I think you deserve it. And in fact, he says, I'm an artillery officer, Pierce. I've blown the hell out of targets you couldn't see if you stood on top of them, which I don't get why. I mean, yes, that's impressive, but it's like, well, he's a doctor. Why would he care about that? You know what I mean? Like, so, okay. And I then mean, he has...
You know, not to interrupt, yeah, but...
No, go ahead.
No, in his mind, he's equating their job proficiencies.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay. I'm good at my job, like you're good at your job, kind of.
Right. Like, you know... Like he could bomb an anthill and not hit anything else around is his kind of claim to like, oh, you know, you can dig around in a person and find every last bit of shrapnel and still patch him up as if it were nothing.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. I never really thought of it like that. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then he is saying, you know, I'm great at my job and I respect my commission. And then he says, you know, in that shave, that robe, you're a disgrace to your commission. Which, you know, I guess he's just sort of personally offended that someone who is a captain in the U.S. Army would walk around the way he does. You know, I mean, obviously most of us don't agree with that, but you could sort of see his point of view. But he is a jerk about it. And then he says, you know, I'm going to lower the boom on you. I'm not going to lower the boom on you. And then next time, watch it. And then I love the Hawkeye's performance or Alan Alda's performance where he's like, I don't know how to thank you, Captain. And he's clearly being very sarcastic. And then when he says, forget it. And he says, forget it. He told me to forget it. You know, put another bottle here. Put it on my tab. And he's saying it to the nurse. And he actually grabs Stryker's hand and starts kissing it. Bless you, sir. Bless you. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm like, he's really pushing it at that point. Really, because Stryker is not the kind of guy you can kid around with.
Yeah. I mean, that's like I get Hawkeye sarcasm because I would probably be the same way. I'm like, no. You've made too big a deal of this. I can't just let it go. You know, mm-hmm. like it's nothing. But. Yeah, that does kind of, you know, it's almost like he's trying to see it, how genuine the forgiveness really is.
I guess so. I mean, to me, it's like, look, you just basically got away with it thanks to Colonel Potter. Don't push it, Hawkeye. Like, just let it. I know Hawkeye can't help himself. That's what makes him Hawkeye. If it was BJ, BJ would have just said, thank you, sir, and gotten up and walked away. Yeah. But Hawkeye just can't resist sort of poking the bear a little bit. But that, again, that's what makes him who he is. So now we find the hut that Zale is living in with his moose, Suki, and the BJ arrives. The actress playing Suki is uncredited, so I don't know who she is. She doesn't actually get any lines, but I would think she would be. She's an actress in the show, but we don't. She's uncredited. And then BJ tries to talk some sense into Zale about, you know, well, you could just rewrite your marriage licenses. Like, well, why are you mad at your wife doing it, but it's okay for you to do it. Zale basically says, I don't make up the rules, Doc. It's not the same with a man. It's just like, okay. BJ has that line, carry your own double standard, Zale. And he gives him the letter, Mrs. Zale East, as he calls her. And basically, you know, Zale kind of goes along with it and says, and you get the sense maybe that BJ is regretting this a little, that he's regretted writing this letter because we've seen Zale is so unsympathetic about cheating on his own wife.
Yeah, I mean... First off, you can definitely tell why Klinger hates Zale.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
they hate each other. Those two do hate each other, yes.
Yeah, like I can totally side with Klinger on that argument. Okay, first off, I might be the only one confused here, but why does BJ call her Mrs. Zale East? Is there a reason behind that, or is it?
I guess just because he's suggesting that, well, there's two Mrs. Zales. And so Mrs. Zale in Korea is the Eastern Mrs. Zale.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I feel dumb. That's pretty obvious now that it's right there in front of me. Oh, but yeah. Poor BJ. I mean, he's gone out of his way to be the nicest guy to Zale, do all this stuff, try and help repair every sort of thing that might be wrong. And then come to find out the dude is just, you know, has been going on with his moose since way before the whole Hilda letter.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. This has been a while too. Right. This is not,
he's probably been there since season one.
Yeah. He's got like a hut and you could see he's got some of his stuff around. So yeah, this isn't a new relationship. So yeah, you would think that when you got the letter from your own wife, you would say, well, okay, but Zale's kind of a jerk. As you said, we can understand why Klinger doesn't like him. By the way, no Klinger or Mulcahy in this episode at all. So we don't get a chance to see it. Klinger get in another fight with Zale. That we'll have to save that for a later episode. But yeah, the way that Mike Farrell plays the scene, I get the sense that BJ regrets having done all this now, because he just feels like Zale isn't really deserving of all this effort, but he's not going to rip it up. You know, he's at this point, I think he's probably more sympathetic towards Mrs. Zale West than he is Zale. So he's just like, all right, he goes along with it. And that's pretty much going to be it for he's basically saved Zale's marriage. And then we get to Hawkeye relaxing outside the swamp. He's got his feet up on some sandbags. Burns has got a metal detector with a bunch of people that are, I guess, presumably he's forcing to follow him around. One guy's in football pads. Yeah. And then they discover something buried in the ground. And so BJ wanders by and he's carrying a beer with him, which is nice. And then they dig it up. And there's this great moment where he says, one of the guys says, look, Major, fresh earth. And you got BJ say, oh, I saw that. It was with Paul Muni and Louise Reiner, which is the movie The Good Earth, not Fresh Earth. I assume that BJ is making that joke just on purpose. He knows the name of the actual movie. Mm-hmm. And then we find out in the ground is a clay pot. And inside the clay pot is kimchi, which is pickled cabbage, a.k.a. it's going to become coleslaw. And I love that. I love that there's people that are watching all this. They're not part of Frank's gang. They're just sort of ogling and they're just sort of standing by. And I love that when Burns gets upset, where, you know, Hawkeye, BJ says, I get title of this land, Major, before word gets out. Don't you understand, man? You've struck coleslaw. And I love that the other people that were standing there just walk away kind of laughing at Burns. It's like, that's what they expected following, watching him do something. They knew that this was going to blow up in his face, no pun intended.
I'm just curious, if Frank was so determined that it was a bomb, why did he wait that much longer to get everybody together to go dig it up?
I know, right. Yeah, he waits. Well, because he's an idiot. You know, I mean, well, he is still an idiot. You got to remember that.
I'm sure he probably did have to, like, go to, like, you know, 6-10 people before he got two of them that would come along with him.
Maybe so.
You dig. You watch them dig.
Right,
I'm going
right.
to hide behind you, human shield.
He couldn't get Zale because Zale was busy, you know, and he had somebody else to do it. So that's the end of the episode proper. And then we have a nice bumper where our A plots and B plots can converge, where Hawkeye and BJ basically tell each other about the events of the episode that we just watched. And we see them making balloons with rubber gloves. They're listening to the radio and they just kind of zip back and forth. And then they pop the balloons just to scare the hell out of Frank. And I love that Hawkeye does the un, deux, trois. And it's the only reason to this day I know how to say 1, 2, 3 in French. Thanks to Hawkeye's the un, deux, trois. And they pop the balloons. And then that, of course, causes Burns to come out from his sandbagged tent. not his tent, his cot. And he pulls out his gun. Of course, it's not a gun. It's just the lighter that he forgets. And it's kind of a nice scene, the way it ends, of just Hawkeye and BJ drinking together and they're smiling and the music is playing. It's one of the closest scenes MASH is ever going to get to making it look kind of like a fun place to be. It looks like it's like a nice night at camp with your buddy.
Yeah, I really like the music they have in the scene too.
The radio music playing?
Yeah. It just feels so, well, cozy.
Yeah.
It's relaxing.
Nice, yeah. It's nice. They don't want to make the 477 look like a place that you want to be, but they couldn't help it sometimes because it's just like, well, these are people you want to hang out with. And it just looks like Hawkeye and BJ are having a nice night. You know, they're drinking, they're listening to some music, they're having some laughs. Burns is an idiot. You know, it's all good. It's all fine. So it's a nice, sweet ending to a relatively inconsequential episode. I mean, considering some of the huge shows they would do in season 4, this one is in kind of a minor key. But it's still a very funny show. It still features a lot of great lines, and we'll get to your favorite line and my favorite line in a moment. I do want to talk about the people behind the episode. I mentioned these are two names that were new to MASH. Jay Fulb, he passed away in 1997. He wrote 5 MASHs and was an executive story consultant for MASH in the later seasons. And he worked on After MASH. So he had quite a long history with the show. He worked on other TV shows, and he had some credits on Maud. The director, John Erman, this is his single credit as director for MASH. He worked on shows like Family, Marcus Welby, Roots, The Next Generation, and even directed an episode of Star Trek, the original series. So this was it for John Erman. I never know why some directors just get one shot. and then that's it. They don't get to come back. But he does a nice job. He presents some nice atmosphere, especially in the final scene. So overall, Clinton, like, what do you think of this as an episode? Is this like one of your favorites from season four? Is it a mid-tier one? What do you think of it?
This is probably a mid-tier, a little bit higher. It's definitely not my favorite from season four, but it's pretty good.
Yeah,
I've laughed at it on three different rewatches so far. So
hey, that's pretty good.
That holds up good.
Like I was saying, I've been saying a lot this year, is that the reason I love season four so much is because the show is impressive in big ways and small ways. And this is a small way. This is a minor show, two very small plots, but it works. It works really well. And in fact, they would sort of almost repeat the Hawkeye plot in a certain way in season six. The Grim Reaper episode would be a very similar plot, but overall, it's a really fun show. So do you have a particular favorite line or joke or line from this episode?
Oh man, so many lines stick out. Sorry, Don't Feed the Bulldog pops in my head at least once a month. Before I get into a favorite line, I'd like to point out one of the things that gets brought up and is never addressed again in the entire series.
What's that?
Would be Potter being 1/4 Cherokee.
Oh, right. Yeah. we never hear that about that again.
And I'm not sure if he, you know, if they actually intended Potter to be, or if he's just saying it to make Byrne shut up.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I don't think Colonel Potter ever lies on MASH. I don't think we ever hear him say a false thing. I think Colonel Potter is always a straight shooter. So if he says he's 1/4 Cherokee, he's 1/4 Cherokee. But you're right. They never address it again.
I mean, with Potter being from Hannibal, Missouri, it's easily conceivable.
Right. Absolutely. You
know, Missouri is just like catty corner to us in Oklahoma, heart of Cherokee Nation, you know.
There you go.
And Hannibal is a few hours away, but it's doable.
Yeah, no, I totally buy it. I totally buy that. That's it. But yeah, we never hear it again. So yeah, what is your favorite? If you can pin it down to one joke, what's your favorite joke from the episode?
Oh gosh, as far as a joke, I really like when Frank is haggling for the price of the lighter, and Radar sitting there. I can't say six in Korean. Well. Tell him 5 and 100 pennies.
Right, right.
6 and 100 pennies. All right, 6 and 100 pennies. 7.
Yeah. Burns falls for that a bunch of that. He fell for that when he tried to buy the bust for Colonel Potter in the Dear Mildred episode too. He does not know how to do that. I do think there's a bunch of funny lines. I already mentioned a few. The swimming upstream against the bourbon is a great line. I like it when BJ discovers Burns with the metal detector, and he asks sort of Hawkeye what's going on, and Hawkeye says Eisenhower's coming. Frank wants everything just so, which I love. I love that idea that Eisenhower's coming to inspect the troops. But my favorite joke of the whole episode is when Zale tries to make the excuse to why he's got a Korean girlfriend, and he goes like, "Who knows when we could be knocked off, Doc? We're pretty close to the action." I love that BJ replies, "Some of us are a little closer to the action than others." I love Mike Farrell's sort of offhand delivery of that line. That always makes me laugh. I just think that's a little closer to the action than others. So overall, it's a nice episode. It's a nice low-key episode. And, you know, I mean, a lot of other shows would regard – like, I think a lot of other shows, sitcoms, would be happy, would say this is, like, one of their best shows. And to MASH, this is like a lower gear episode. That's how good MASH was.
Man, and I feel sorry for that moose.
Yeah.
She lives right next to where they buried the amputated limbs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, we even forgot. We talked to – oh, God, I forgot about that line. What an offhanded, grim line that is about that Radar talks about that it's out by where we throw away the limbs. What a grisly line to just toss in there. I mean, I guess they wanted to remind everybody that, you know, there's some grit here. It's not all just kind of low stakes hijinks. There's some real nastiness going. Imagine that's somebody's job at the 477. Ugh.
Hopefully Zales.
Yeah, maybe. Oh God. Ugh. You probably stuck Igor with it. That seems like something they would stick Igor with. Yeah, but man. Oh God, I forgot about that line. This is horrible. So, well, they said that's Of Moose and Men. Of course, again, I should have mentioned. It's a play on Of Mice and Men. MASH love to do that. They love to take famous things and and do riffs on it for the titles of their shows, of course, for the famous novel by John Steinbeck. So that's of Mice and Men. So, Clinton, thank you so much for coming by, man. This was great to be able to finally do a MASHcast with you.
Hey, thanks for having... Wait, this wasn't Pod Dylan?
Yeah. Well, I transpose it for all my feeds. It appears on Treasury Cast and on Fade Out on Pod Dylan. It all just works together. So why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internets?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me, Rob. If anybody wants to follow me online, I do a few podcasts of my own. The first one is the Coffee and Comics podcast, where I basically look at a random comic in the span it takes to have a little coffee break. It's on its own feed, but you can also find me on the Longbox Crusade Network doing a little show called Fan Film Fridays, where I have a guest over and we kind of look at online fan films, you know, those lesser known movies that are made with varying levels of budget and quality, but we seem to have a good time talking about them.
All right. Outstanding. I said, yeah. And you have Twitter feeds for all of those shows, right? Because you can make fun of me. You have a lot of Twitter feeds as well.
I only have three at the moment. That is like 1/10 of yours.
All right, fair enough. I'm just saying you're on your way. That's all I'm saying. So
it's an addiction.
It sure is. Speaking of Twitter feeds, you can find MASHcast over at Twitter on MASH477cast. All the back episodes are on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Amazon Music. And if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various awards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Dolph DeVries, Britt Schramm, Mike Thomas, and Michael Porter for their support of MASHcast. So that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you next week. And until then, that is all.
Attention, Captain Honeycutt. Captain Honeycutt, please report to the hospital.
Major Burns probably taped himself to a patient again.